This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a podcast of Checkpoint for Joy 94.9. You're here with Luke from Checkpoint on Joy 94.9. I'm now joined by a very special guest on the phone in Sydney at the moment, showing off the new Witcher 3 expansion, Blood and Wine. I'm talking with Fabian. How are you today?
I'm very good. Thanks for calling. Excited being on the show.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for joining me. And now you're the studio communications manager there, is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. I'm the guy who tells all the great stories about this amazing, amazing game, which is a really nice job because it turned out amazing in the end, so I didn't have to lie.
It always makes your job easier when the product is actually really genuinely fantastic, huh?
Yeah, most definitely.
Yeah, now I want to talk quickly about that as well, Fabian, because, I mean, The Witcher 3, it came out sort of around this time last year, and it has received so much critical praise, many publications calling it Game of the Year 2015, and even won awards for that as well. How has that been for you to see a game that obviously has been worked on for such a long time and worked on so hard to receive all this positive praise?
Rewarding, that's just the word that comes into my mind first, because after all the ups and downs we had, you probably remember that we had to delay the release twice. Yeah. Because we wanted to fine-tune and work on the game and expand it, and then finally having it out there and then finally seeing that people like the game, that's just a great experience. And if you work on a game for such a long time, you sometimes get that kind of like that tunnel vision and you have doubts, even if you shouldn't have, and even if you do internal reviews, you're never sure what really happens until the first reviews pop up. And that day when that review embargo lifted, we're based in Poland, so I think it lifted around noon at our time.
Yep.
Everyone came in the office early, and yeah, let's just see and treat this as a very normal work day, but nobody was able to do any work until noon, until the first course came in. Everyone was like literally sitting in front of the laptop or PC, pressing F5, refreshing, and at the same time shaking. But it turned out quite well, so yeah. Yeah, that was that feels really good to see all the awards the game got over the last year.
Yeah, fantastic. And I do have to say, just personally, because I did get a copy on day one myself, and the cool thing for me was actually bringing that home, opening it up, and there's this lovely little note in there from you guys, from the guys who made the game, actually saying, you know, thank you so much for buying this game, and we made this for you, and we really put a lot of effort and love into this game, so here it is. I think that was a really genuine, nice touch. What sort of reception did you get from that note from people?
Great. It's kind of funny to see, because that's like not a big effort, and if people trust you or they pre-order or they spend 60 or more bucks on your game, I think that should be a common thing, but not too many do it. But one of our founders and like the guys running the studio said they're so thankful for all the fans and all the support, so there should be a little note in there. There was with the first copies we sold, like before we had like a second reissue, there was like the free soundtrack and the free DLCs, and that was basically just a thank you for the fans. And also what I mentioned earlier, when we had to push back the release, there were almost no negative reactions. And these days, where it's so easy, especially online, just to hate on stuff anonymously is the word, yeah, then it's cool not to see that. We didn't have any people saying, well, you guys, this really sucks, you pushed it back. They said, well, take the time, I'm sure it's worth the wait, and we just were grateful that we had an audience and a community like this who didn't really flame and hate us for not delivering on time.
Yeah, and I think that speaks as well to the quality of the previous games as well. You know, I think with a game with such a vast open world like the Witcher franchise has had, I think people are a bit understanding when it comes to delays and trying to get things right, because they'd rather play a product that's going to feel completed and feel right rather than getting something that's rushed in the last couple of months.
Yeah, and it was a first for us. I mean, we always had that vision to have a fully explorable open world role-playing game in the end, but Witcher 1 was our first game, and we learned from game to game. So, but we didn't really have the experience of other studios when it came to open world. And open world probably is the most challenging genre you can tackle. And we have our own engine, which we had to adjust. So, that was quite interesting. I could probably tell you stories about the whole development process for 4 or 5 hours. They're all funny, a bit tragic, but as you said, as long as it works out in the end, it's good. If it wouldn't have worked out, I would have not wanted to be in the studio that day.
Yeah. Absolutely. And now I do want to talk about the new expansion, Blood and Wine. So no firm release date for it yet. It's probably going to drop in the next couple of months at some time, I believe.
It's not, I mean, we said it's the first half of 2016. So the very, very latest, it would be end of June. But we're trying to get it into the hands of gamers earlier. We don't want to, like, have them wait for much longer, because we see that they might slowly get impatient to get into the world of The Witcher again.
I think people are itching for it, definitely. Especially now, Hearts of Stone was the first expansion and was, you know, very well received. I have to say, one of the great things about these expansions so far, and what I understand of Blood and Wine as well, is it's not just a little expansion. It's not just like a bit more content. You're actually delivering this massive chunk of even more great gameplay. So, I mean, how big is Blood and Wine going to be compared to the main game?
It's always a bit hard to compare, but if we come down to numbers, we said that Hearts of Stone would be 10 hours. We think it was more in the end, but you've got to be a bit more conservative with that.
Yeah.
And once it launches, someone does a speed run in 5 hours, and then you look stupid.
There's damn speed runners, huh?
And then they have that speed run ready a day before launch, and you wonder yourself how they do it, but it always happens, and they're good players. So we'd say for Blood and Wine, it's at least twice the size. If you really want to break it down to numbers, for example, Hearts of Stone had about 6,000 lines of dialogue. Now we have 14,000. That gives you a good idea to compare that. But I think the biggest issue when it comes to size and the way how you approach it, Blood and Wine is a completely new world. So while Hearts of Stone expanded the main map and you just had a new big chunk that connected to No Man's Land, the Valen area, now you could probably compare Hearts of Stone to Skellige in terms of it's not directly connected to that world. You have to travel there. So I'd say it's not only a set of new quests and question marks on a map, it's more like an entire world, which is the stage for Geralt's final adventure.
Yeah, sure. Now, in terms of this being, you know, this adventure, it seems like there's a lot of good story packed into this one as well, of course, because it wouldn't be more of The Witcher without some more great story. So can you tell us a bit about what the story is in Blood and Wine and what we can expect?
Most definitely. So first of all, which might be a bit surprising, but it's also very refreshing, the whole setting looks more like, let's say, southern France or Italy. It's a very bright, sunny world called Toussaint. And you've got all these knights in their shiny golden armors and that nice castle-like city called Beauclair. And everything looks perfect, but because it's The Witcher, obviously, there's a little dark secret like hidden in there. So unfortunately, it's not as perfect as it starts. And you have like 20 new monsters, new boss fights, and quite a dark story that slowly unfolds. So what starts like a little Disneyland tour quickly turns into the blood part of the Blood and Wine title.
Yeah, right. Now, I have to say, I did come across a screenshot before I spoke to you today that was released online that was probably one of the gorier sort of screenshots I've seen of The Witcher. I think you probably know the one that I'm talking about, with a certain person lying on a table, not looking much like a complete person anymore.
That one, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, is that a bit of an indication of this kind of darkness that you're talking about, of, you know, it might look all pretty and pretty beautiful on the surface, but there's really something quite horrible going underneath?
Yeah, let's say that guy who was sliced up into many little pieces met another person who has some is carrying some parts, or let's say maybe fingernails that are able to slice somebody. Into these sausage-like look. But yeah, if you look at the we recently released the cover art for the game, where you can see that vampire-like creature behind Geralt sitting on a throne, having a glass of wine, and that's connected to the story. So undead creatures definitely playing a huge role.
Yeah, right.
With bloody consequences, of course. So it gets surprisingly enough, it gets more gory than the main game.
Oh, wow. Because, I mean, the main game already, it sort of divided some people, in terms of it was quite visually, a bit violent, very adult in its content and stuff like that. So you're saying that Blood and Wine actually goes even further than that?
It definitely does. Yeah, while it looks super nice, do you say, like, on the outside, and if you go there the first time, you'll figure out that... this turns into quite a horrible thing quite fast. Like, we're not using the violence and the gore to hide any weak spots of the game. They really fit in really nice. And if you talk about vampires and those kind of creatures, it kind of gets bloody, but it never looks like staged, or it would be just for the effect. So nobody should be worried that we're introducing new, even more spectacular fatalities, but as part of the story, yeah, people are going to die.
Yeah, sure. Now, my next question was going to be, actually, did the violence sort of just come naturally from the story that you guys were trying to tell?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Geralt is quite a powerful character, and you've got all these ghouls and monsters, and if those ghouls and monsters are getting hit with a long silver sword, then sometimes they lose body parts, but... we didn't have the dismemberment, for example, in from the beginning, but then we started playing around with it. And what it just does, while it might look like cheap violence, it just gives you more impact and more dynamic. If you hit some half-rotten, drunken drowner and you slice him into two, it just feels better. And if it feels better, we decided we wanted to have it in the game.
Yeah, sure. And I know, so what has the reaction been from people who have been playing Blood and Wine, even behind the scenes, comparing it to the previous expansion and even the main game in terms of the content? Have they found it as engaging? Would you say more engaging? How's the reception been so far?
I mean, if I tell you now that everyone loves it, you're probably saying, well, he has to tell me. But we even got some diehard fans in because... there's a lot of references to the books, and you might meet some characters you were missing from Witcher 3 and from the first expansion. And so people love that a lot. They love the new look because, let's say, if you played The Witcher, the main game, and if you played the expansion, you most probably spent 100 plus or even 150 plus hours in a really dark and nasty and foggy landscape. If you think of No Man's Land, which isn't like the nicest place to live, then they actually enjoyed the contrast a lot. And we also using Blood and Wine because it's the final part of The Witcher 3 and brings that whole adventure to an end, to fix some loose ends and to bring some stuff to the end where people said, well, they probably didn't like this and that. There were a few people who said, while The Witcher 3 was open world, they didn't like the very open ending where the game ended, and depending on what ending you got, you were kind of alone in the world and you didn't meet your former friends anymore. So we listened to that. And so what we're doing as a reaction, Geralt actually finally has a home where he'll move to. He gets a vineyard as a present for a quest he fulfills, and he helps the Baroness. And then you can actually settle down there, renovate your vineyard, and maybe some old friends are stopping by to visit. And reactions have been really good, both to the new looks and the fact that we're telling all those, or putting an end to all these question marks we still had in the story. And I don't think anyone who's going to play Blood and Wine and likes The Witcher will be disappointed. I absolutely have no doubts that people will love it.
That's really great. And I mean, how has it been from a development perspective in terms of, I mean, you said before The Witcher 3 finished and then you were able to get that actual feedback from people. How much did that craft the final that you've now created for Geralt? I mean, like, obviously that's a really handy way of getting that direct input from people to try and frame that story and finish it in a way that you think everyone's going to like the most.
Well, if you know how games development usually works, so let's say that the quest guys, they finished work on the main game, obviously, way before the whole game was finished, yeah. Because at some point you lock the content and then you just do bug fixing and QA. So once that was done, and that was a while before The Witcher 3 released, they could like gather new ideas, go into the forums, see what they couldn't do back in the days, and then just go from there. So we got to be honest, with The Witcher 3, when we were in the development process, the tools and the engine, they weren't done until the very end, and there were certain things we couldn't do, and we knew that we would be able, like, because we did so many updates, and we obviously did work on the engine, that we would be able to do these in the expansions. So that's happened, and some of the critics we heard about, like, we were simply wrong, like, we didn't think people would bother about this and that. So we were actually super happy in the end that we had these two expansions to deal with those things and kind of see it as a fan service and, again, giving back to people who helped us improving. We even tried doing that in the main game when, right after it released, people were complaining about the inventory and that they don't have these stashes and boxes. So we said, well, we thought that this wouldn't be important, but if it's important to you, we'll fix it. And we had it released with one of the patches. Yeah, fan service, I mean, just listening and trying to be responsive, and if it makes sense, put it in. That has been a main goal for Blood and Wine.
Yeah, I think listening to fans, definitely, it goes a long way with that, just that back and forth rapport with people, which is fantastic. So now, with Blood and Wine, before we wrap it up here, Fabian, I just want to, is there anything else you can tell us about Blood and Wine? Any sort of little hints about it that we can get with the impending launch of the expansion?
Well, what I totally forgot to say for all our Gwent fans we have out there, we have a brand new Gwent deck, the Kelliga deck. You wouldn't believe how many people actually really care about that.
I completely care about that, so I completely understand. So I'm a Gwent fan thick and thin.
And of course, because people will spend more time, we'll get the New Game Plus level up to 100 and have 30 new weapons and 20 new monsters and all that kind of stuff. But we completely reworked our user interface. I think that's one of the biggest changes.
Yeah,
and
wow.
This, while the user interface was okay or good, it didn't really match the quality of the other parts of the game. And that's where we probably fell a bit short. So you'll be surprised that now we have like a very professional, way more like easier to handle user interface, and we're also introducing like those little things like customizable armors, which we didn't have before, and we're bringing in mutagens, where you can like go even further into character development if you want to, and give Geralt up to 12 new completely game-changing abilities. So if you want to spend even more time than the 20 hours I mentioned earlier, you can easily expand them to 30, 40, 50, whatever you like, feel how deep you want to go into the game.
Yeah, right. That sounds fantastic. Well, look, Blood and Wine, it's just around the corner. I know a lot of Witcher fans in my life, including myself, are very excited about it. So, Fabian, thank you so much for taking the time to join me today on Checkpoint.
Thanks for having me. That was a pleasure.
This has been a Joycast of Checkpoint for Joy 94.9. If you like this podcast, please rate us on iTunes and Stitcher.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.